There's this important distinction between objective and subjective reality. I think you know about this, but the objective reality, you know, the way things are, and subjective reality, how we understand this. An easy example, especially for you scientists and engineers, is with math. You know, math, so the world is out there, and whatever, calculus and algebra, they already exist. They're in the world. They're a way to describe the world, the language of the world. But I don't know those things yet, and so my subjective reality isn't matched up with objective reality. But I can learn. I can grow to learn these things, and then the two can match. I can conform myself to objective reality. And in a sense, that's the Christian life, right? It's not changing objective reality. It's we ourselves conforming to objective reality, our subjective reality changing to match what is objective. And we see this here with Mary Magdalene. Christ had already risen from the dead. That was already true objectively, but she didn't know it yet. She was still caught in the sight of the empty tomb. And so she was weeping. She was sad because of this. The body was gone. Now, we heard here from in the first reading about baptism, and of course we had several new Christians be baptized at the Easter Vigil. And we can ask the question, what happens at baptism? Lots of things happen objectively at baptism. Our original sin is taken away, which includes all personal sins up to that point and all punishment due to sin. We become participants in the divine life of the Trinity. That we don't understand, we can't understand that fully, but sometimes we even cease to even think about it, consider this, that we become participants in the divine life of the Trinity, the life of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We enter into that through baptism. Of course, we're incorporated into Christ and into His church. We receive the theological virtues of faith, hope, and charity, and we become beloved sons and beloved daughters of God. That all happens objectively, but the babies that are baptized, they certainly don't know this subjectively. But oftentimes we adults, even if we've been living our Christian lives for a long time, we don't know this, or at least our full subjective reality hasn't yet conformed to this. And it's not just a matter of time, right? It's not like for the baby, okay, the baby's going to grow, and if the baby receives a good Christian upbringing, they're going to come to learn this more readily. But it's not like time is the only necessary ingredient. We need to be intentional about converting ourselves, right? About coming to the Lord, surrendering to the Lord, so that He can conform us to that reality. In the Easter Vigil, we heard this phrase from the prophet Ezekiel, "I will sprinkle clean water upon you to cleanse you from all your impurities, and from all your idols I will cleanse you." See, this happens, of course, in baptism. Very vivid imagery here of that. But not just at baptism, the entire Christian life. Being cleansed of our impurities, being cleansed from our idols. So we can keep asking ourselves, keep asking the Lord, what are the impurities in our heart? What are the idols in our lives? Because the Lord wants to free us from those. The Lord doesn't just want us to use us to do work for Him out in the world, to convert the world or do things for the world. That's fine. He can use us for that. But there's something that's primary, which is He wants to cleanse us. He wants to remove our idols. And these idols, they're often subtle. You know, they're the easy idols, the drugs, addictions, and those things we can easy in the sense that it's easy to recognize them. But there are much more subtle idols. When we say we fall in love with something, and even if something good, well, we can become attached to that. And then we, without knowing it, we start to conform our lives to that attachment. Or if maybe it's out of something bad, somebody hurt us, and so we get hurt, we get wounded, and now we want to protect ourselves from not being hurt again. And so we put up a wall, we put up a defense that it works in the sense that it prevents us from getting hurt again, but it also has this collateral damage of it prevents us from receiving the love of God and receiving the love of others. So the answer to both of these types of attachments, these subtle idols, are to move towards detachment from everything in the world. We want to be attached to God alone and to be moving towards Him. The good things here in the world, They can be more, we can see them more as signposts. You know, a silly example, if I have to drive to Boise, the destination is Boise. If I see a sign on the way that tells me Boise is this way to the west, and I stop at that sign to eat lunch or whatever, but then I say, oh, you know, there's such a good view here of the lake and it's so comfortable here and there's nice shade under this tree, I think I'm just going to stay here under this sign. Well, I've missed the boat, right? I've missed the point. The sign is not there for me to stay at the sign. It's there to point me to Boise. And these are the same things with all the good things here on the world. They're not here to keep us attached to them, to camp under them. They're here to point us to the Lord. Now, we hear from this gospel here in Mary Magdalene something really incredible, where Jesus says to her, stop holding on to me. Stop holding on to me. Jesus says this to her. Stop holding on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. See, even Jesus, I mean, don't get me wrong, we can be attached to Jesus. All the saints tell us to be attached to Jesus, yes. But not to our projection of who Jesus is or what Jesus wants us to do, and etc. Jesus doesn't want us to just be attached to him. I think we can put it this way. Jesus wants to bring us to the Father. So even Jesus, if I just hold on to Jesus and say, Jesus, no, let's stay here. Forget this whole Father business. Let's just stay here. He would say, no, stop holding on to me. I'm going to ascend to the Father, and I'm going to draw you with me. I'm going to draw you to myself, to the Father. So Mary Magdalene can enter into this reality, and she can be converted. And anyone who read the little reflection in the beginning of the Magnificat, there's a really pungent line where he says, it is from, so they have taken my Lord, and I don't know where they laid him. That's, of course, Mary Magdalene's words. The commentator says, it is from this pessimism that she and we must be converted. So what are attachments, our idols, our pessimisms that we from which we must be converted? So that we can go with Jesus to the Father. So that our subjective reality can conform to the objective reality that Christ has risen from the dead. And we who have been baptized, we have been risen with him. We don't need to wait until we get to heaven before we start enjoying a fuller life. We don't need to wait until circumstances, until the world changes before we start living a more joy-filled life. We have already died and been raised and risen with Christ. So now we can live in that reality. Our subjective reality can conform to that objective reality. And we can sing with the psalmist every day, every moment of every day, the earth is full of the goodness of the Lord.